Yochai. Somehow I'm going to try to bring it into the parsha, so I'm going to get that out of the way in the first 90 seconds, and then we can move on. So a word about the parsha and a word about Sefer Vayikra as a whole. Sefer Vayikra is a book about holiness. And as we began, Korbanot, and we moved from Korbanot, the Kohanim, and everything seemed to make sense until this point that we arrived at a lot of interpersonal mitzvot. We found things having to do with families, having sexual relationships. But as we moved from end of last week's parsha, Parshat Emor, to Bahar, in Emor we talked about the holidays. So holidays are also a thing of holiness. And obviously there's... I'll say that again. It's a thing which obviously is holiness to them. I could claim that the holidays are related to the Beit HaMikdash as well, although the thing that was interesting about last week is when it did speak about the holidays, and maybe I'll reframe this, there are three different lists of the holidays as a big discussion. One of them is found in Emor, one of them found in Parshat Pinchas, the one is found in Parshat Re'eh. I don't want to right now break down all of them, but what's interesting about the list of holidays here, it's not the focus on Korbanot. What it includes or doesn't include is interesting because it seems to include it also includes the Omer. And the Omer is agricultural, and that's the point which is interesting, is that we didn't notice it last week, but we should have noticed it this week when we then think in retrospect. The Omer, what it did for us is it created this model of 7 times 7 equals 49, leading to the 50th. And that model, we didn't realize at the time, was really a micro of a macro system. And the macro system is also agricultural, and that's what we find between Shemitah and Yovel. So therefore, this agricultural aspect of Sefer Vayikra, and therefore of holiness, moves over almost seamlessly into the laws of Shemitah and Yovel. And Shemitah and Yovel really do point towards, and not just Shemitah and Yovel, all of the agricultural laws really point towards what we can call social justice. It points to a system that we take care of those who are unfortunate. And, you know, if you just think about the Shemitah year, you think about some of the other agricultural laws, you think about the idea of Yovel. All of these things are ordered to try to create some kind of sense of justice and some kind of sense of a charitable institution. But there's another issue that needs to be understood as we move in that direction. And that is, and maybe it's subtle, but, and maybe this is part of Yosef's dream. You see, what does it do with Yosef's dream? The brothers are all shepherds, and everyone is shepherds till this point. And Yosef dreams about the day that they're going to become a farmer, and their stalks will bow down to his stalks. So the coming of the farm, of becoming a farmer, is something which is going to take place in the future. I've said before that I think when the brothers look at Yosef, he reminds them of the first farmer. He reminds them of Cain, and they see themselves as being shepherds like Abel. So we have this Cain and Hevel break, but it's different. It's Yosef sees the future when the Jews are going to have a connection to the land. You have a connection to the land to become farmers. So, but is being a farmer is something which is simply to be viewed as a curse, which is a post-Eden curse to be a farmer? You work from the sweat of your brow, you'll have to work. Or is being a farmer something which is really profound, the way that we work and serve the land, and the way that we work, and the way that we create a society. We'll just put it like that. Which means really what I'm saying is, if we use slight Gemara language, is working a b'di'evit or is working l'chadchila. You know, for some people, the hardest verse in the Torah is Sheish Yomim Ta'aseh Melachtecha, right? For 6 days you work. So, keeping that in mind, we will now move over what will seem to be completely disconnected to all of this, and that is we will talk about Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. As I said, especially because today is Lag BaOmer. So, just a couple of words about Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. The first thing, just in case we don't know who he is. Well, that's a good... we don't know who he is because many people didn't know who he was. Rav Shimon Bar Yochai was really quite secretive. And as far as we're concerned, he walks onto the scene when he becomes one of Rabbi Akiva's new set of students. So even though he's mentioned the Gemara beforehand, there's the famous, famous machloket, that day that everything went crazy in the Beit Midrash, the day that, it says that one of the students asks Rabbi Yeshua, is davening Maariv, is it obligatory or is it voluntary? Rishut or chova? And Rabbi Yeshua gives one answer, and then he goes to Rabbi Gamliel, and he asks Rabbi Gamliel, is it obligatory or is it by choice? And he gives a different answer. He goes, but Rabbi Yeshua said something else. And he goes, okay, let's bring him in. And the next day in the Beit Midrash, they have those who fight Rabbi Gamliel, punishes Rabbi Yeshua. That is the source of, that is the cause of Rabbi Gamliel then being replaced. That is where Elazar ben Azariah ends up coming in. And that's where Elazar ben Azariah is, but his wife says he's too young and he grows a beard. That's that whole story. But there's one thing I want to add to it. At the very end of the Gemara, after it tells us how, again, basically, the whole place went crazy. At the last line, what does the Gemara say? And who was that student who started all this trouble? Who was the student who went to Rabbi Yeshua and then went to Gamliel and told Rabbi Gamliel what Rabbi Yeshua says? It says the name of that student was Shimon Bar Yochai. That's the last line of that Gemara. Who was that? That was Shimon Bar Yochai. But what's interesting about that point is that's what Shimon Bar Yochai when he's a student. Now, if you're going to ask yourselves a question, which probably you should ask, so why was this student of Shimon Bar Yochai so interested whether davening Maariv is an obligation or whether it's not an obligation? Let's think of it this way. Everybody davened Maariv. So his question was, when I daven Maariv, is this a Torah law, a rabbinic law, is it a custom? What's the status of the Maariv that I daven? Or, if it's Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, there may be a different motivation. And this I'm going to say now without backing up, without bringing you a host of sources about. Because Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, we're told, eventually gets to this point that he won't stop his learning to do other rituals that many of us do. And the Gemara then questions, but how can this be? And it says, no, that's Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. Shetorato umnato. Today, everybody's Torato umnato, right? He says, from the Gemara, who represents Torato umnato? That's Rav Shimon Bar Yochai. But it's interesting, Torah is his life, his livelihood. That's what he does. He does Torah. So it could likely be, like that, it could likely be that when he's already asking here, do I really have to daven Maariv? If it's Rav Shimon Bar Yochai asking, what he's asking is, or can I just keep on learning? Is this an obligation or is this not an obligation? And I think that's at least the idea that he's playing with when he brings this up. Now, Rabbi Akiva's students die. I do want to stress, they were called Tamidei Rabbi Akiva. They were students. When Rabbi Akiva then meets the five new students, it's interesting that the five new ones are actually called, so Rabbi Akiva came, Eitzel Rabboteinu Shebedaron. He came to the rabbis in the south. So it sounds like Rabbi Akiva, when he came to these new five, the new five were already people of stature, but of course Rabbi Akiva was of greater stature. Now, those five are among the greatest five of Tanaim that we have. I'm not going to go into all of their discussions. There's Rabbi Yehuda, there's Rabbi Yossi, there's Rabbi Shimon, there's Rabbi Meir. Now the fifth that I left out will be upset with me. But I want to mention one Gemara. It's Yerushalmi, which is why it may not be all that well known. So it says as follows, that every teacher, every Rebbe, would always have a student that they selected in order for people to know who takes over. When you have yeshivot that don't have a Rosh Yeshiva in waiting, it can become a problem. When a man like Rav Amital, while he was still functioning, said, okay, we need now to find the person or the people who are going to replace me, there's something of great merit to this. But I'll say it again, there's certain people who just, they pass on, and then there's no clear understanding who takes over. So the Gemara says like this, Amar Rav Ba, Rav Ban the Yerushalmi is Rabbi Abba. Amir Rav Ban. B'rishoni kol echa v'echad mimana et talmidav. Originally, every single person would appoint a student in order to take over afterwards. Kagon of Yochanan ben Zakkai minat Rabbi Elazar with Rabbi Yeshua. So he took two students. So it's interesting. He took two students to take his place. He felt that the two of them together would be needed to be the ones that will take his place. Rabbi Yeshua at Rabbi Akiva. So in case you want to know, where did Rabbi Akiva get his authority from? Well, he got his authority from the extension of Yochman Zaka, given to Elazar and Yeshua, and Yeshua then giving Rabbi Akiva the authority. Rabbi Akiva at Rabbi Meir. And Rabbi Akiva then appointed, as it were, Rabbi Meir as his successor. Thank you. Now let me finish the sentence. Rabbi Akiva at Rabbi Meir, at Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Akiva appointed both Rav Meir and Rav Shimon, but Omar Yoshev Rav Meir Tchila. But he said, Rav Meir, you're the one who sits right here in the front row. Nitkarkemu Pnei Rabbi Shimon. And Rabbi Shimon's face sort of fell, he sort of frowned. Visually, you can see he wasn't happy. I mean, the two of them were chosen, but one is chosen to sit in front. Right, what I will say about Rav Meir was a scribe. Rav Meir was the one who recorded Rabbi Akiva's teachings. We eventually hear in the Gemara that the Mishnah that we have is the Mishnah of Rabbi Akiva according to the notes of Rabbi Meir. That's the default of the Mishnah that we have. So it says, Amula Rabbi Akiva, sister of Shimon, who frowned, Dayacha sha'ani ubaracha makirin kochacha. He says, it's enough if me and God know who you really are, know your power. So that's very interesting. It's interesting because it indicates, A, that Rabbi Shimon was incredibly, it's not here on this page, the source I didn't give you. I just decided to tell it to you now. So what's interesting about this source is that Rabbi Shimon seems to be a person of really great stature, of great capabilities. Rabbi Akiva knows it. Nonetheless, he won't appoint him as the successor, but he knows that he's a man who will be a successor. He appoints Rabbi Meir as the successor. Nonetheless, he gives Rav Shimon this honor, but he says, it's okay, I know who you are and God knows who you are, which again seems to indicate there is something secretive that the average person doesn't really know who Rav Shimon is. Okay, now we can begin. In the first source, is one which will be very easy for us to understand. You know, till I started thinking about this, I didn't realize how old I am. And it really never occurred to me. I was born in 1960. So it never occurred to me that I was born only 15 years after the Holocaust was over. Just like never in my mind. It's 15 years. Oh, actually, it never occurred to me, I guess, growing up, that 15 years is such a small amount of time. So 15 years has become less and less, but 1945, 1960, didn't occur to me that I was born 12 years after the establishment of the state. I mean, that seemed like ancient history, you know, but I guess it's not ancient history. There's some people who were even alive in 1948. So, which means that you're very old. So, So when we were growing up, I think this will be true for most people in the room, I don't have to explain this to you. When I explain this to people who are 18 years old, then it's a little, they get it, most of them. When we were all young, from 1945 onwards, most Jews that I knew would not buy a German car. I don't have to go any further. I don't have to explain anything. Done. It's true. So the Gemara over here starts off by telling us that Rabbi Yehuda is called Rosh Medaber Mechol Makom. Of the five students of Rabbi Akiva, the one who is the primary speaker, the one who speaks first all the time, is Rabbi Yehuda Bar Ilai. He's, again, one of those five students. It doesn't tell us here that these are the five students. You just notice that this happens to be three of them in a row. So it says that, and it now gives an example. So for some of you, this sounds like a joke. So once upon a time, three rabbis were sitting. Okay. So who are the three rabbis? Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, and Rabbi Shimon. Again, three of those five new students were Rabbi Akiva. The Yehuda ben Gerim Gabayhu, and there's another person, Yehuda ben Gerim, and he's sitting and he's listening in. Patach Rabbi Yehuda v'Amar. Rabbi Yehuda begins and he says, Kama noim ha'seim shel umazu. He's talking about the Romans. He goes, no, these Romans are pretty darn good. These guys have done a really good job. Tiknu shvakim. Shvakim is the plural of shuk, right? We don't say shuks, right? Tiknu shvakim. They made marketplaces. Tiknu gisharim. They've made bridges. Tiknu marchatzaot. And they've made bathhouses. Rabbi Yossi shatak. Rabbi Yossi had nothing to say. Why was Yossi silent? Because his mother once said to him, if you have nothing good to say, then don't say anything. Na, Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai. Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, and incidentally, sometimes he's called ben Yochai, sometimes bar Yochai. I saw somebody this week on social media. Somebody asked a question, I responded, and this person said with absolute, complete confidence that he's never called Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai in the Gemara, that's only in the Zohar. Okay, it's very good. It's not true, but it's very good. In this passage, he'll be called both. Ben and bar are the same thing. One is Aramaic and one is Hebrew. A ben mitzvah or a bar mitzvah. You can ask, now, why is a girl called a bat mitzvah, not a barta mitzvah? I don't know. Okay. So anybody wants to go back Anybody wants to go back? Yeah, I know. For a lot of people, the bar is more important than the mitzvah. I know. Okay. So, Nenna Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai, va'amar, and he says, Kol ma shetiknu, basically he says, are you kidding me? That's like in Rashi. He goes, are you kidding me? Kol ma shetiknu, everything that they've done, lo tiknu elo tzarech atzman, they've done for themselves. Tiknu shvakim, they've made marketplaces, lashim bem zonot, in order to put hookers. Because there's a philosophical problem. Can you have a street walker without a street? What are they called then? So you need marketplaces in order to put them, to put prostitutes. And he says that's why they've made these places. Marchat sa'ot, why do they need bathhouses? La'aden behen atzman, in order to give themselves pleasure. I do think the word la'aden over here may be a literary foreshadowing of something else which will come up in this story. And keeping that in mind, because of course, la'aden, Eden, Garden of Eden. Well, then again, you could accuse me that I always see the Garden of Eden, but it's actually here, so leave me alone. Okay. Gisharim, why did they put bridges? Litol mehem meches, in order to charge taxes. Halach Yehuda ben Gerim v'sipir divrayim. Yehuda ben Gerim, who was the fourth person listening into all of this, he goes and he tells over the conversation. I don't believe it's that he went to report, he went to snitch. No, he went and repeated this, and this private conversation became public. V'nishmu l'malchut, eventually it was heard by the government, the Romans. Amru Yehuda she'ila yitaleh. Yehuda, who had nice things to say, he's going to get an official government position. Yose she'shatak, Yose was silent. Yigaleh l'tzipori, he'll be sent on exile to a city called Tzipori. If you've ever been to Tzipori, you understand why that's exile. No, I'm kidding. But that's already ominous, because if he's being exiled for just not saying anything, you know that Reb Shimon's in trouble. Shimon shegina yehareg, and Shimon, who had bad things to say, will be put to death. Now, his personality, although that's harder because that's a psychological term, his obsession, which is even more psychological, I've already said it before, Reb Shimon is about learning Torah. Reb Shimon, it's almost tunnel vision. It's all about learning. It's all. There's another passage in the Gemara that tells us when Rabbi Kiva was in prison and the Roman guards are all over, Reb Shimon walks in and says, "Teach me Torah," and Rabbi Kiva says, "No, no, like no," and he goes, "If you don't teach me, I'm going to tell my father, report you to the government." So that's Reb Shimon. Reb Shimon is just so focused on learning. That's who he is. Over here, it's so. What's his solution? Uzal hu ubrei. Him and his son, they go. Tashu Beit Midrasha, and they go and they hide in a Beit Midrash. Now, it could be for some of you, the best place in the world you can hide would be a Beit Midrash. Right. No one's going to look for you in a Beit Midrash, right? So, correct. Menachem Begin, that's where he was running the Irgun from. He put on a black hat, he sat inside a Beit Midrash, people thought he was a Baal Meifis, people came over to him, religious, non-religious, all day people were asking him questions, and he didn't even have to open his Gemara. All day he sat there with the Gemara open, and people. But that's where he hid, because who knew that this guy with the hat on happens to be Menachem Begin. But I said, but Rav Shimon Bar Yochai, to hide in a Beit Midrash, you just have to. He obviously thinks this isn't so serious. He obviously thinks the Romans are going to come. They're going to knock on the door. His wife's going to answer. Is Shimon here? We'd like to kill him. No, I'll tell him when he comes back to give you a call. And, but apparently, he's not taking it all that seriously. And it says that every day, Kol Yoma Havas Maisi Lahu Divtayu Rifta Vakuzu Demayu Karche, and his wife every day brings water, food, bread, takes, and every morning she comes to the Beit Midrash, they're not looking, brings the tray and brings in the food and whatever. But then something happened. Ki Tokov Gzerata, but then it increases. The Gzera increases. It becomes more dangerous. And then he gets afraid. And he says something which some of you, the people in the room, may be a little bit disturbed about, which I'm not going to qualify or explain. Omer le lebre, he says to his son, Nashim daitan kalan alayhim. Women are, do you want to translate daitan kalan? Lightheaded, if you will. Dilma mitzarela, and they may come and torture her. Umagayalan, and then she's going to say where we are. Now, I want you to recognize there is a solution now, so that all three of them go and they hide, I don't know, in Tzipori. No one's going to look for them there. But instead, Azlu, he says, let's get out of here. Tashuba Marata, him and his son go, and they hide in a cave. So I want to stress, emphasize, that for Rabbi Shimon, it's all about learning Torah. and whatever collateral damage. Rabbi Akiva in prison, you don't want to teach, I'll tell the Romans on you. His wife may get tortured, doesn't make a difference. Rabbi Shimon, it's all about learning. Davidi Marif, perhaps, I have to learn. I have no time for these things, we have to learn. For Rabbi Shimon, it's a total, absolute obsession, but I don't say obsession as far as the psychological, no, that's what he is. He is Kulo Torah. We'll see to what extent as we continue. Right, so when they torture her, which is okay, she just won't tell, because she won't know. Good. So let's continue. Let that be a lesson. Okay, so let's continue. It says, he and his son go off to a cave. Itrachish Nisa, and a miracle takes place. Now, I will tell you of the various Tanoim, Reb Shimon is a miracle worker. This is not an isolated incident. There are other cases as well that Reb Shimon is a miracle worker. There's a Gemara in Me'ilah that says they need to send someone on a mission off to Rome, and they say, let's send this guy. And his father says, but it's dangerous, send Reb Shimon. And Reb Shimon's father says, you know, he's also somebody's son. It's okay. He's Malumad Benisim. Reb Shimon knows how to do miracles. Reb Shimon's going to be okay. Who's going to touch Reb Shimon? It's Reb Shimon. Please. Don't kid around. There's the version of the story in the Yerushalmi is a little different from what we have here. I believe it's in Shviya, no, Trumot. It also has him doing miracles in the story. I mean, the Reb Shimon does miracles. So a miracle takes place, but over here it's interesting. He doesn't do the miracle. He walks into a cave. It's Rachish Nisa. A miracle takes place. Ivre lo chruva ve'ena demaya. And a tree appears and a stream of water. In the Yerushalmi, they call the cave that he goes into the cave of the Charuv, the carob cave. That's what it's called over there. But over here, and it says that eating Charuv after all those years, it says it causes terrible things to his body. In that Gemara, it doesn't say it over here. So I don't know if you want to go on a carob diet. We already made enough fun of carob recently, right? Okay. Right? They try to convince all the American kids. Yeah, Israeli kids eat this. Yeah, they eat it like chocolate. I've never met an Israeli kid eats like chocolate unless their parents were out of their minds. Okay. Sure, it tastes just like chocolate. It tastes just like chocolate. And then they would say, no, in Israel it's fresh. So it tastes good in Israel. Until it got to America, it tasted like you know what. Okay. So... but I guess if nothing else to eat, having charuv could be pretty good. So he goes into the stream. Suddenly there's a tree that grows in this, and a stream that appears. So those of you from Brooklyn who don't realize this, trees actually need sunlight, and trees need, you know, other conditions in order for it to grow. I know a tree grows in Brooklyn. That's also a miracle. But you need certain conditions, so this is the miracle that takes place. But notice another thing. This is a pastoral scene with the stream and with the tree. This is a Gan Eden-like experience or description. And if you're not convinced yet, you will be convinced in the next line. It continues and it says, "V'havi mishalchei minayhu." They took off their clothing, and they would sit without any clothing on, with the sand up covering themselves. And the reason the Gemara is about to tell us is because they were afraid. They don't know how long they're going to be here. Their clothing is going to wear out. So I'm saying, somebody sitting, learning, we're about to learn Torah with the stream and with the tree. This is a Garden of Eden type of experience. And that's exactly the point over here. Let's continue. Kula yoma garse, all day they learn Torah. Be'idan, it's also noticed that you word idan over here. Be'idan tsluye, when it came time to pray, love shoe, then they put on the bekesh, they put on the clothing. Miksu, they covered up. Umatzlu, and they prayed. V'hadu mashlechem inayu, and then they took the clothing off again. Ne'echidu livlu, in order the clothing not get worn out. Itvu treser shani b'marata. They stayed in this cave for 12 years. Ata Eliyahu v'kama pitcha d'marata. Eliyahu appears and comes to the opening of the cave and says out loud, Amar, man ludoi l'bar yochai. Oh, notice that. He's called Bar Yochai. I guess somebody stuck that in. He goes, who's going to inform Bar Yochai demet Kesar that the Caesar has died, uvatu gzerate, and therefore the decree has been canceled? So, obviously, by saying this, they heard. Nafku, they go outside. And then they see the craziest thing, something they haven't seen in years, and something they can't even imagine. They see people working in agricultural work. They see somebody planting, plowing, doing all kinds of agricultural things. And Reb Shimon looks in absolute horror, because he can't understand this person's value system. Omar, and he says, Minichin chayi olam va'oskim b'chayi shah? How can a person abandon eternal life and be involved in such temporal things? So just pause there for a second. So for Reb Shimon, that's very easy. Why is it very easy for Reb Shimon? Because everything is taken care of for him. Reb Shimon's been in Kolel, right? He doesn't have to do anything. He gets food, he gets drink, he gets everything taken care of, and he does not have to work a day in his life, and miracles happen to him. Now, this is Rabbi Shimon's position. Hold off on this source for a moment, and look at the Gemara in Brachos in source number 9. Here we have an argument between Rabbi Yishmael and between Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Yishmael says a person should divide their day, they should learn a bit, and they should work. And Rabbi Shimon finds this outrageous. Talmud lomar v'safta digonecha hanheg behem min hamderek haaretz. A person should work. Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai omer efshar adam chorish b'shat chorisha v'zareya b'shat zriya v'kotzir b'shat tzia v'dash b'shat disha v'zora b'shat haruach Torah mati aleha. Right? If you work in an agriculture, there's always things to do. When are you ever going to learn? By the way, you could say that the Shat Zriya is not the Shat Tzira, and the Shat Tzira is not the Shat Disha. And it's not that you're doing all those things all the time, but he just can't understand this. Elab is manshi sol osin ritzono shomakom. Reb Shimon says, when the Jews do God's will, milachtan na'aseit ayidei acherim. Other people will work for you. You don't have to do anything, and everything will be done for you. Shenemar va'amdu zorim v'ro sonchem. V'zman she'en Yisrael osin ritzono shamakom milachtem na'asita yidei atzman. But if you don't do God's will, then you have to work, which means essentially work is a punishment. And I do want to remind you, this really very much sounds like the pre-Eden versus the post-Eden experience. Pre-Eden, you live in the Garden of Eden, everything is taken care of for you. And post-Eden, you get punished, and from the sweat of your brow, you have to work. And Reb Shimon is saying, sweat of my brow? No, I'll do Ratzon Hashem, and I can go back to the Garden of Eden, and therefore God will take care of me. And one thing which is really interesting, and what's that? It works. It works. For him. You didn't try it. It works. Well, actually, the Gemara concludes that. He says, many people tried to be like Rabbi Yishmael, that you learn, you divide your day, you learn, and you work. And he says, such people were successful. People tried like Reb Shimon, it didn't work. That Reb Shimon's plan works great if you're Reb Shimon. If you're not Reb Shimon, it's a little harder. Going back to our source, so he walks outside and he sees somebody working. So let's just say this clearly. The person working, is he a good person or a bad person? Is he somebody... So you're going to say we don't have enough information. We do have enough information. He's working an honest day's work. Right, he's blue collar, working the land. He is working an honest day's work, but more than that, he is working in Eretz Yisrael, and he's involved in a much larger enterprise. It's the Trumot and the Maestro and the Shemitah and all these things. And remember, there's social justice involved in all of this, and it goes back to the Torah, right? So he walks out. So we're still right here in the middle of source number 1. He walks out and he says, "How can a person abandon eternal life and be involved in Chai Shah? Kol makum shenot nemeinehem, wherever the two of them looked, miyad nisraf. Immediately he got burnt up. Yotzta bat kol v'amrad lahem, a voice came out of heaven and said to them, L'hachriv olam miyatzatem? Did you come out of your cave to destroy my world? Chizru lamaatchem, go back to your cave. So you ever want to wonder where the phrase come, go back to your cave? To Baskol. Right? Kodesh Baruch Hu said to him, go back to your cave. Maspik, we don't need this. See, now I could ask a question. What caused Reb Shimon to have this type of an outlook? Well, God has responsibility in this as well. I mean, the miracles that all took place. God facilitated this. God was the one who gave him the tree, and God was the one who gave him the stream, and him just sitting and learning in this way, living a life believing that you do not have to be involved in any kind of work is actually what brought him over here. So I could have said, you know, Reb Shimon is somebody who only learns Torah. So maybe God should have told him the opposite. Maybe God should have said to him, listen, a little intense, you've been learning a little too long, you need to take a little vacation. A lot's really nice this time of year. Go chill a little bit, Reb Shimon, you need to, but it's not what it says. It's not what it says. It says he needs to go back to the cave. Although, when he goes back to the cave, it says, Omar, he says, it's also interesting, it's him, not them. You have to pay attention to this whole narrative, when it's the both of them and when it's only him. Omar, Reb Shimon now says, they say, Mishpat Rishoyim B'Gehenim Shnei Mesar Chodesh. The amount of time that a person who's guilty of terrible things is a maximum of 12 months. This is the minhag. This is where the minhag comes to say Kaddish, either 12 months or some people less than 12 months, because they don't want to say that a parent was completely guilty. The Vilna Gaon's father, by the way, asked him to say Kaddish for the whole 12 months. He said, what if I am guilty? Just in case, eh? So over here, Mishpat Rishoyim Gehenim, they go back now. So it's interesting. Before I said that their existence over here was the Garden of Eden. So now their existence over here is an existence in Gehenim. So I'm saying that's the flip side, and that's what their perspective is in this. Okay, there's a larger issue to all this. And the larger issue is what exactly is God's plan in all this? Because I'll say it again, God facilitated this both the first time he comes in and the second time he comes in, although I'll say it again, their perspective on reality has changed. The perspective on reality the first time is really this is a Garden of Eden existence, and the perspective the second time is that there really needs to be some kind of a healing which will take place. Yeah. Yeah, I was thinking about that as well. I was thinking about that as well, because there is something antisocial about a sword, and you inverse the letters, you have chaver, and you have one of connection, chibur, and whatever. So there really is an isolation over here, and he's being fed by the charuv, and therefore there's this lack of connection with society. But I want to use another source to explain this source. And the other source directly has nothing to do with this, but there's a commentary on the other source which does. The other source is a Gemara in Sukkah, which is source number 2. So we're just going to let our eyes wander down to source number 2, and then we'll come back and try to finish Bli Neder, source number 1. It says, Tana Rabbanan Shmonim Tamidim Hayu L'Hillel Zaken, that Hillel the elder had 80 students. Shloshim Mehem Ruyim Shetishva Shechina Leim Kamosh Rabbeinu. 30 of them were on a level like Moshe. That's an unbelievable statement, that they were worthy for the divine presence to be upon them. And 30 of them were worthy for the sun to stand still like Yeshua. And 20 of them were, we'll say mediocre, but Gadol Shebekulon, the greatest of all the 80 students, that's how this is understood, is a man named Yonatan ben Uziel. The Katan Shebekulon, and the least of all them, Rabbi Yochim and Zakkai. Now, the Gemara says, now what can I tell you about Yochman Zakkai? Shaloi niyach mikra mishnah talmud halachot. There was no scripture, mishnah, Gemara, which means discussion of the mishnah, laws, agadot, dikduk dikhor, dikhor, so from kalot v'chamarot, gzeret shavot, kufot, gematriot, sichat malchi asher, v'tzichat shedim, sichat dekolim, mishalot kovs, mishalot shulim, dover katan, dover gadol, masim rakova, dover katan, vayta bayirava. He knew everything. Whatever your definition of Kol HaTorah Kula is, along the way of my non-translating, is that when two palm trees would wave to one another, he understood what they were saying to one another. So over here you have absolute, total knowledge and understanding of everything. The Gemara says, L'kayim ha-shenemar l'hanchil ohavai yesh. V'otzrotayim amalei. You know, those who love me, I fill up their treasure houses, meaning with all knowledge. So the Gemara then asks what should be an obvious question. This was the least of all the students. If this is the least of them, the greatest one of them knew all of this and then some. I don't know what the then some is, but he knew all of this. The Gemara then says, that they would say about Yonatan Uziel, when he would sit and learn Torah, that the intensity of his learning was so great that if a bird were to fly overhead, it would immediately get burnt up. So that's how the Gemara ends. Hillel has these 80 students. The greatest of them has unbelievable intensity. I'll say the other way around. The least of them knows everything. The greatest of them knows everything and has this great intensity. So there's a postscript to the Gemara, which is what I'll read inside in a moment, but first a little bit of background. The postscript is a Hasidic Rebbe talking to one of his students and going over this Gemara, and then the student having a little bit of chutzpah, or it could be sincere chutzpah, but he asks him, so the Gemara over here described the least of the students and the greatest of the students, but what about the Rebbe? What's the secret of the Rebbe? What's the power of Hillel? Now, of course, within the Hasidic story, and the Rebbe being asked over here is the Kutzke Rebbe, and if it's Kutzke Rebbe, he himself is fire, so he asks, so what is the secret of the Rebbe? How do you become a Rebbe? Meaning, how great was Hillel? How great was Hillel compared to those other two students of his? And that, I think, is really the important dichotomy over here, between somebody who's a student versus somebody who's a teacher. So we will see the answer to this, which is one version of it. I found a couple of them in source number 4. A sefer which, of course, talking about Hillel, and it's called Imre Shammai. Hinei amrinim b'suka kof ched, al Yonatan ben Uziel, omur lo b'shosh yoshev osik v'tora kol ov shepareich alov miyad nisraf, omur hadmor rav nachem endo mikatz chatzal, ki lehillel hazakein rabo shal Yonatan ben Uziel, hoyakvar hakoach la'atzur, Shlo Yisraf. How great was Hillel? He was on the level that most of you are on, that when a bird would fly overhead, when you're learning, absolutely nothing happens. But what he says about Hillel is Hillel had all the knowledge of Yochim ben Zakkai. Hillel had all the passion of Yonatan ben Uziel. But Hillel knew how to control that passion. Hillel knew how to interact when no one got burnt. You know, if you go back and think about the famous Gemara where Hillel and Shammai are both approached by this individual, we, of course, in retrospect, can call him a prospective convert, but an individual comes over to Shammai and says, teach me all of this Judaism stuff while I'm standing on one foot. So Shammai's perspective, and again, he's right. Shammai takes a stick. It's not just a stick, by the way. What is it called in the Gemara? It goes, Amata Binyan. He takes something that you use to measure, to build, And he hits him with this, and he chases him away with the bit with. It's a ruler. It's called Amata. It's what?
It's like a T-square.
I don't know what that is, but if we build anything, we'll bring him. So Hillel. Sorry, Shammai's trying to say something. If you want to build something, you need a foundation. You can't build something standing on one foot. You need to build something strong. You can't learn all of Torah when you're standing on one foot. That is a total insult to every single Jew who's ever lived to say, I'm going to give you a sound bite and just tell me what Judaism is. But Hillel is different. Hillel, meaning Shammai's indignation was correct. It's the right answer, as much as you don't want to hear that. It's the right... It's,
the rabbi once said, if I was there, I would have done what Shammai.
Right. It's the right. What Shammai did is the right answer. And don't fool yourself about Shammai. Shammai in Pirkei Avos says, what's he saying? Havi makabel kol anav b'sev upon him yafos. Shammai was, and that's not just what he said, it's what he did. Shammai greeted every person with a smile. The only reason that Shammai's reputation suffers is because there was a Hillel up the block. If there was no Hillel around, so Shammai would have been seen in such a different perspective. But what does Hillel see? Who is able to stand on one foot? Malachim, angels, stand on one foot. So what does Hillel see when he looks at people? He sees angels. He sees angels. And he says, it's Selam Elohim, he sees an angel in front of him. So Hillel's able to somehow control all of this passion, not burn anybody, and just give off these feelings of love. But that's the extraordinary position of Hillel. But realize what the Kutzker Rebbe is saying. He's saying is that to be a Rebbe, you need to control the fire. You need to control the passion, which means, and then he continues and he says, in the last line, "Ulefize efshar lomer gan kan." In this Gemara that we just now learned, "Shele Rabbi Shimon hoya kvar koach ma'atzer shlo yisraf." Now this is when he's going to come out the second time. What does Rabbi Shimon need to develop the second time in the cave? He needs to go through a metamorphosis from being a Talmud to becoming a Rebbe, to becoming somebody who now is going to take responsibility. Somebody who now, instead of burning people, now he's going to put out the fires. We go back to source number 1, and it says, they go back into the cave, they're there for 12 months. And now after 12 months of purgatory, it says, now come out. Nafku, they go out. Kol hechad havamachir Rabbi Lazar, his son Rabbi Lazar is still burning things.
Havi Masi Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai. Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai extinguishes. So he's burning and he's extinguishing. Now you know why we connect him with Lag BaOmer. Okay? Omer Lo, he says to his son, and this is going to be a little strange, B'ni, my son, Dai Lo L'manivata. The world only needs the two of us. You start the fires, I'll stop the fires. That's all that it needs. V'hadi Pani D'mali Shabta. That this happened when it was Erev Shabbat. Chazu, they see, Ahu Sava, an old man, to have a knock at Trey Madi Asa, V'roid Ben Hashmashar. They see an old guy with two bunches of Hadasim running Ben Hashmashot, running in the afternoon, in Shabbat afternoon, late afternoon, and it's ready Ben Hashmashot. Amrulo, Hani Lamalach, they say to him, what's with the Hadasim? Amrulo, he says, L'chvot Shabbat, for Shabbos. V'tiski loch b'chad, why such a hedonist? What did he need two of them? One should be enough. Chad keneged zachar v'chad keneged shamar. One is for Zachar Yom HaShabbat L'Kadsho, one is Shamar Yom HaShabbat L'Kadsho. Omer Le Levrei, he says to his son, Chazi kama chaviv in mitzvot Yisrael. See how much the Jews love their mitzvot? Yativ datayhu. And at that point, his son became healed and he stopped starting fires. So first of all, let's note something. When he comes out the first time, he sees somebody involved in agriculture, and how can you be involved in agriculture? And again, we used the other Gemara. You're going to plant, you're going to plow, you're going to this and that, dash, this. When are you ever going to learn Torah? And now he sees somebody with the final product, right, holding the Hadassim, and he says to his son, wow, look how many mitzvot. And I'm going to go back to what I said in the introduction. The whole enterprise of the agricultural life is now understood in retrospect as an enterprise of not just social justice, but of serving of God. This is the service of God. This is not like learning Torah is chai olam, and learning Torah is chai olam, and this is chai shah. No, they're both chai olam. They're both involved in something which connects us to heaven. So I'm saying that's what we see at the end, because in both cases, he deals with this interaction with agriculture. But the second time, notice he sees it's not just learning Torah, it's also mitzvot. The difference between Rabbi Shimon the first time, it's how can you do anything other than learn Torah, while Rabbi Shimon the second time is, look how much Jews are involved in mitzvot. The other thing to note is the Zachar and the Shamar, and maybe we can go back to Hillel and Shammai in terms of what does it mean Zachar Yom HaShabbat L'Kadsho versus what does it mean in Shamar Yom HaShabbat L'Kadsho. Shamar most likely means to guard Shabbat on Shabbat. Zachorit Yom HaShabbat L'Kadsho is all week the preparation and the thinking of and the remembering for Shabbat, which means there is this discussion between Hillel and Shammai. What does it mean that you do? Is it that you say today is the first day of the week towards Shabbat, the second week towards Shabbat, or that each day of the week you buy something, you purchase something for Shabbat? So I'll say it again. Zachorit Yom HaShabbat L'Kadsho is something which is done all week. Shamorit Yom HaShabbat L'Kadsho is something which you do on Shabbat. So over here, it could be that now he's finally come to this, again, what was the first thing? What do you need two of them for? That seems to be the Havamina. I don't say Havamina in English. That's the first thought. What is it? You only need one. Which one do you need? Shamar Yom HaShabbat L'Kadsho. Why? Because you have to keep Shabbat. But what's really the point over here? Is in order to get to there, you need preparation beforehand. In order to have the Hadassim, guess what? Someone had to plant it, and someone had to plow it, and someone had to fertilize it, and someone had to pick it, and someone had to then bring it to the kid who's going to be selling it on the street corner, in order for the old man, in order to buy it, in order to bring it home, in order to make the bracha b'ruv b'nei b'samim, in order for all, those things to happen, you need this entire enterprise. And I'm going to say it again, that's the combination. You know, right? As the Gemara says, who cooks Erev Shabbat is the one who gets to eat on Shabbat, right? Unless you're a guest. Okay, so we've gained a little bit of understanding with Reb Shimon. I want to see if we can get a little bit further. In source number 3, remember there was one line in the middle there which was maybe disturbing. He says to his son, the world would be enough, just the two of us. So there's a couple of sources where he goes further. One is source number 3. It says, Amar of Chiski, Amar of Yirmiya, Mishum, Mishum, Ben Yochai, Yochol, and Yiftort, Kolom, Kulom, and Yom, Ben Hadin, Miyom, Shinavreti, Varachshav. I can save everybody from the day of judgment, from the day that I was born till today. The Ilmoli, Elozah, Ben Yimi, if you put my son with me, Miyom, Shinavr, Olom, Varachshav. We can save everybody from the dawn of history until today. There's one of the kings of Yehuda named Yotan, Ben Uziyahu, the Ilmoli, Yotan, Ben Uziyahu, Imanu, Miyom Shinivar Olam Bad Olam. We can save all of humanity for eternity. I've seen the superior people. The way this is written in the Yerushalmi, I've seen the Bnei Olam Haba. And then, maybe it's a little depressing, there aren't so many of them. Im elef haim, if there are 1,000 of them, ani uvani mehem, me and my son are 2 of them. Im ea haim, if there's 100 of them, ani uvani mehem, my son and I are 2 of them. Im shnayim haim, if there are 2 of them, ani uvani haim, it's me and my son. So, you know, the combination of these two things, we can save people in the Yom HaDin, coupled together with this perspective that, how should we say it, that me and my son could do everything. I'll say it again as a little disturbing. There's a passage in the Zohar. There's no here. Good. So I'll tell you the passage, even better. There's a passage in the Zohar which is commenting it's a comment on Avram's negotiations with God regarding stone. So just as an aside, Avram starts and says, God says, I want to destroy stone because there aren't 50 righteous people. So Avram says, what about 45? What about 40? What about 30? What about 20? What about 10? And he stops at 10. So those of us who've been Rashid all of our lives know that why do you stop at 10? Because you need at least a minion. You don't have a minion. Good, and then you can give any kind of musr you want of that. According to the Zohar, he stops at 10 because he thought he won. He thought there were 10, so he stopped. It never occurred to him that Lot and his larger family didn't have 10 people. He thought there were 10. It may depend how many daughters Lot actually had and had sons-in-law and so on and so forth. Good. This passage of the Zohar then continues, and I believe it has the same thought, but it says as follows. Anybody who really wants the source, you'll send me an email and I'll send it to you. In Aramaic and even in English if you're really nice. So the Zohar says like this. Once upon a time, really doesn't say that. No, it actually does. It's Chadzim. Once upon a time, Rabbi Shimon walks out and sees that the world looks dark and all the lights are covered and it looks very ominous. And he says to his son, let's go and see what God has planned for the world. They look and they then discern that there's a very large angel that looks like a mountain that has 30 torches in its mouth. And he says to the large angel that looks like a mountain that has 30 torches in its mouth, just the symbolism, by the way, of the mountain is Sinai, that Sinai has been broken and that we have not fulfilled Sinai, and therefore this Sinai now is extinguishing all the light in the world. And what's the 30 torches? He goes, I've come to destroy the world because there aren't 30 righteous people. So it's over. So now, I think most of us, if we would have taken on the angel, we would have said to the angel, angel, excuse me. I don't know where you went to cheder, but it's not 30. It goes down to 20, then it goes down to 10, and then 10's enough. And just, you know, I don't want to have chutzpah, but you can say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, this is very funny. If they're not funny, it's tragic, that you need 10 people to save the world. There were 10 people, but they were killed. There were surrogate malchus. So you go and kill the 10 righteous people, say, oh, I haven't found 10 righteous people. What in the world are you doing? Do you like that argument or no? That's what I would have said. But it's easy for me to say it from here. But it's not what Reb Shimon says. Reb Shimon says to the angel, go back to heaven and go tell HaKadosh Baruch Hu that Bar Yochai is in the world. Shimon Bar Yochai is in the house. I'm here. So the angel goes up, and it's a great conversation. The angel doesn't say, you'll never guess, you know, you don't say to God, you'll never guess what Reb Shimon said to me, right? It doesn't work. Instead, what does the angel say? The angel says, you know what he said, what should I do? So Kadosh Baruch Hu says to the angel, go back, destroy the world, and please do not pay attention at all to Shimon Bar Yochai. Don't look at him, don't talk to him. So the angel comes back, and Reb Shimon sees him, and goes, you again? If you don't listen to me, I'm going to send you to hell for eternity. You'll never make it back to heaven. And he says, besides, 30 righteous people? Didn't he have a lon chomish? It's 20 righteous people. And if not 20 righteous people, it's 10 righteous people. And then he says, and if it's not 10 righteous people, 2 should be enough. Anybody want to guess which 2 he's going to suggest? He goes, it's me and my son. Al pishtei edum yokum dover. With 2 people, something could be established. The world could be established if there's 2 people. That's enough. And he goes, if 2 aren't enough, then there's 1. And that's me. As it says, tzaddik yisod olam. A tzaddik is the foundation of the world. And at that moment, the voice comes out of heaven and says, fortunate is Reb Shimon, because God makes decrees above, and Reb Shimon cancels them below. And it says about him, the verse says, Ritzon Yerav Yaseh, that God fulfills the will of those who fear him. So Reb Shimon really does save the world. I mean, he's right. He saves the world. He says, I can do it, and he does it. But where is Reb Shimon coming from? Why is he so confident? And the answer is because Kadosh Baruch Hu told him a secret. When he came out of the world, when he came out of the cave the first time, he saw the world in a black and white perspective. Either you're learning Torah or you're wasting your life. And he starts attacking all of those who are not perfect. And imperfection has many, many degrees, right? Many degrees. It's very hard to be a person who doesn't do any good in this world. You have to work very hard. I've heard people say that I've tried as much as I can to keep as many, and I can't do everything, so I'm not going to try and do anything. I've never heard anybody say, I've tried to do nothing, I can't do nothing, so I may as well try to do everything. It's interesting, right? No one's ever said that. So Reb Shimon realizes that there's many, 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 many levels of what people do, but when he came out of the cave the first time, either you're perfect, only learning Torah, nothing else, or you should be destroyed. And what did God say? Did you come out of your cave to destroy my world? Go back to your cave. So God just showed his hand. God says, I don't want the world destroyed. Reb Shimon knows he doesn't want the world destroyed. So that's why when the angel comes through the world, he goes, can you remind him that Shimon Bar Yochai is around? I know you don't want to destroy the world. I know what all this is. I know when I came out of the cave the first time, you made me go back and you made me learn a lesson and you made me take responsibility. You made me shift, go through a metamorphosis from being a student to becoming a Rebbe and take responsibility for others. You forced me to change my worldview from looking at the world in black and white. And isn't it interesting that Rav Shimon Yochai, if you know this, is connected to the rainbow? It's connected to many, 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 many colors. Because for Rav Shimon, it's no, I would say, 50 shades of whatever, but I can't say that anymore. They stole another metaphor from us. But you see that Rav Shimon is somebody who now sees the world in a much, much different way, just like he sees the guy with the Hadassim. Oh, look how much the Jews love the mitzvot. So this new Rabbi Shimon is somebody who can save people. I do want to go back to the very beginning of the first Gemara, because I think that there was something which is fascinating. I'll be there. But before I do that, let me read a couple of things. One, source number 10 is a Gemara in Menachot. It talks about learning Torah day and night. The words of Torah should never depart from your lips. Amar Rabbi Ami midrash Rabbi Yosi nilmad afilu lo shana adim ela perek achad shachud perek achad arvit ki yamitzvot lo yimush sefer Torah zemipicha. If you only learned a little bit, it's still as if the Torah never departed. Rabbi Yochanan mishum Shimon ben Yochai afilu lo kara adim ela kriyach mashachrit va'arvit ki yamitzvot lo yamush. If a person only said Shema day and night, that would be enough for the person to never have been of the status that Torah departed from their mouth. This is the same Reb Shimon who saw somebody working and saying that you're giving up eternal life. The Gemara is interesting. It says that the opinion of Rav Yochanan was, V'davar zeh asur lomar b'nei ha'aretz. Don't tell the Amorites in this. Because this way they'll at least try to learn. V'rava amar, mitzvah lomar b'nei ha'aretz. Let everybody know that they really are included in the Jewish community, and even by saying the minimal, by just saying Shema, it's even a wonderful thing. This is the same Reb Shimon. So I have a source that you don't have in front of you, and this is the Stei Chemed. The Stei Chemed says, it's very obvious to me that the first source is before he heard the bat kol, and the second source is after he heard the bat kol. Before he heard the bat kol, Reb Shimon's perspective was you only learn Torah. But after he learned the bat kol, he understood that the Jewish community is a much more interesting Jewish community, and people are involved in mitzvot in a much more of a complex and involved way than he had ever imagined. And and this time the world is different. I also want to mention the Chassam Sofer. Chassam Sofer in source number 12, he talks about the machlok between Reb Shimon Bar Yochai and Reb Yishmael. And he writes, source 12, Shamati mimori v'rebi, Hafla. The Hafla was his Rebbe, Rav Pinchas Alevi Horovitz. B'had the pleager of Shimon Bar Yochai, Rabbi Shmuel, Rosh Perkates and Mevarachim, Askin and Harbe Asuk, Shimon Yochai, Velo to Biyadam. And the end of the Gemara is that people tried like Rav Shimon and didn't succeed. Omer Huz Zechron Levracha, my Rebbe said, the Hafla said, Sha'asukir of Shimon Yochai, Velo of Shimon Yochai, Mamash. Devade Misha Kavanaso, the Shem, Hashem, Abochin, Machshavos of Yodea, Eshtenosav, Bevada Yala Biyadam. Elohim asu kirav Shimon Yochai nidbum lo v'lo be'etzem toch niotam adkan alkein lo alta biyadam. So he says is that the people tried like him, but you're not. If you're not Reb Shimon and you're not really on that level, it's not going to work. But if you really are completely, completely motivated like him, then maybe. V'amar haynu de'amri hacha, and we're going to skip the rest of this. comparison over here, and go at the end, right before it's underlined, is Ad Kan Divrei Harav. Okay. Mikan ve'elech tosefet divrei talmido hapa'ut kimoni. And the Chassam Sofer says, and now let the insignificant Talmud add on a little bit to the idea of his Rabbi. Nir lefi intaiti, Rabbi Shmuel nami lo omar mikra vasafta digancha ele be'eretz Yisrael. Rabbi Shmuel's position is in Eretz Yisrael. V'rov Yisrael shurum sha'avod be'karak agufa mitzvah mishum yishav Eretz Yisrael. You didn't expect Zionism coming from the Chassam Sofer. He says that working the land of Israel, that's the mitzvah, Yishuv Eretz Yisrael. Ulahotzi perusa kadosh v'alzet sifta Torah v'safta digancha. Uba'oz zora gorin and so on and so on. It's a mitzvah. V'ki'ilu tomar, it's a mitzvah to work the land. Agricultural mitzvot. He says, not to work the land. What's Rabbi Shmuel saying? Z'ki'ilu tomar lo aniach tfilin. V'bnei sha'ani osuk v'torah. Hachinami lo yam alora sof diganim v'bnei osik ha'torah. He says that the idea that you can sit and learn in a kolel, Chassam Sofer says, is only possible in Chutz La'aretz. In Eretz Yisrael, having a job is a mitzvah because you're part of a much larger enterprise. The taxes that you pay are going to go for social welfare to take care of other people. The taxes you pay are going to go to the army in order to take care of the Jewish people. There was, in source number 14, source number 14 is, you only have one page? Sorry. Really? Okay. So if you email me for the rest of the sources, in source number 14, it says as follows. This is a sefer which is called Mishnah Sachir. It's written by Rabbi Teichtel, the one who wrote the Ein Bonim Smecha. So he was a chassid who was anti-Zionist, influenced by the Satmar Rebbe. So this is, he adds on over here and he writes, Elachiv lasuk v'lasuk b'yushuv ha'arz v'nei shezeh gufa mitzvah. He goes and he says that the halach is like Rabbi Yishmael, the bas kol as well. That was really the point that I said before. The bas kol implies that the halach is also like Rabbi Yishmael. Because it says what? The people working, these people are doing positive things. But anyway, it says, v'chein b'shar umaniyot sheyesh m'yushuv ha'olam. And he goes, if you notice at the end, the Chassam Sofer said, and other things as well in this generation. Ha'kol b'klal mitzvah zu, shekach posach rosh ha'poskim. He takes this position of the Chassam Sofer as psak, migdolei aposkim achronim, the greatest posek of all the achronim, Rabbeinu Chassam Sofer, shenitzkavlu psakov kimoshe mipi ha'gvura. So he takes this psak of the Chassam Sofer as saying that Yish of Eretz Yisrael, the person who's working in high tech in Israel, the person who's driving a cab in Israel, the person who's sweeping the streets of Israel, he's saying that all of those people are being mekayim, a mitzvah of Yish of Eretz, and the halacha is like Rabbi Yishmael, because the psak of Chassam Sofer is accepted like Moshe Mipi Agvura. But I'll say it again, when Rav Shimon comes out of the cave and he hears the bas kol, that's exactly what the Steich Hamid said. At that point, he understood the halachas of Rabbi Shmuel. At that point, Rabbi Shimon himself backed down. But I want to end up in terms of a halacha. Now, I don't know what you have, what you don't have. You don't have anything else. Okay. I want to say one other halacha. There is a halacha in Kol HaTorah Kula about something, and generally we know about this from the laws of Shabbat. It's called Dover She'eino Mitkaven, or Dover She'eino Miskaven. There's an argument between who? Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. What's the argument? Dover She'eino Miskaven, if you do something, but it's not what your kavana was. So Rabbi Shimon says, Dover She'eino Miskaven is mutter. Not just potter, by the way. He says, Dovah she'ein miskavein is mutter. Rabbi Yehuda says, Dovah she'ein miskavein is asar. Which means, Rabbi Yehuda is result-oriented. Yes? Yes? You agreed on that point? Because Dovah she'ein is asar, because it's result-oriented. Or Rabbi Shimon, what you're thinking at the time makes a very big difference. If you go back to the very first machloka that took place regarding the Romans, what was Rabbi Yehuda's perspective? Look at the results. The results are okay, so therefore it's okay. Look at Rabbi Shimon's perspective. No. Lahanos atzmim, right? Their intention is for themselves. And that's why he apostles it, which means this is Rav Shimon using the idea that it's the kavana which makes a difference, and therefore he's ready to attack the Romans because he believes their kavana was an evil kavana. On the other hand, the position of Rabbi Shimon, the Dovash Ein Miskavin is mutter, that if you didn't have intention to break something, so then it was allowed to be done, because essentially sin is rebellion against God, not in terms of actions or results, but in terms of intention. Rabbi Shimon just now saved the entire world by an unbelievable amount of sin. Because again, let's be honest, we look at things in terms of results. Rabbi Shimon looks at things in terms of intention. The Gemara says, this is an important Gemara, regarding Avodah Zarah, if there's an Avodah Zarah right over here at the corner, and they have some kind of ketoret which has a nice smell, and if you smell it, this is Avodah Zarah. So you say, Avodah Zarah, Yaharig Vayavor, you're not allowed to enjoy Avodah Zarah. But your house is over here. Do you have to walk all the way around the block in order to get to your house so you don't walk by the Avodah Zarah? So Rabbi Shimon says, no, you can walk right by the Avodah Zarah. Why? Dovashena Miskavin. You had no intention. Regarding all the mistakes that we make on Shabbat. I mean, how many of us have actually got up and said, Hine Muchen Mizumen Lechal Shabbos Vehesya? Right? We don't do that, but we make mistakes. Rabbi Shimon just saved us from all, again, he just saved us from all these mistakes. He essentially took sin and turned sin into only rebellion, which is when Shimon says, I can save the Jews in the time of Din. This is not just this philosophical point, I'm going to grab this Malach who looks like Har Sinai, and I'm going to stop the Malach from destroying us. In Rabbi Shimon's halachic perspective, Rabbi Shimon was able to save so many Jews in so many centuries. So I'll tell you the truth. I don't know if Lag BaOmer has any connection with Shimon Ruchai whatsoever. I don't know. I'll put it this way. For the first 1,400 years or so after he died, nobody ever said anything about him dying on Lag BaOmer. Nobody ever thought about such a thing. Eventually, somebody figured out that he died on Lag BaOmer. Okay, so better late than never, I guess. But the Torah of Reb Shimon, which means what he is the continuation of Rabbi Akiva. There's multiple continuations. It's those five students. And those five students filled the world with Torah. Those five students, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Meir, I mean, these are the students that fill the world with Torah. So maybe it is particularly appropriate to speak about the new students of Rabbi Akiva who didn't stop, who didn't give up, who didn't say, listen, there's so much destruction, there's a Holocaust, who can continue at this point? But rather, there's a new generation that stand up and say, let's take responsibility. For Rabbi Shimon, it's interesting, because what's his first stage response? Just learn. I just need to learn. Look at all the Torah that's lost. I just need to learn. I just need the information. I need to learn. And eventually the learning gets filled up with an unbelievable passion. And what we heard from the Kutzker Rebbe, that's not enough. Now you need to go to the next level, and now you need to control that passion, and now you need to become a Rebbe, and now you need to protect Klal Yisrael. And that's what we learn, is eventually he absolutely succeeds in that, and at that point he becomes Rebbe Shimon Bar Yochai.